I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Den här podcasten presenteras av Nordic Spirit True White, den tobaksfria nikoprillan.
Yo, what's up? It's James from Perturbator, James Kent. I'm here in Stockholm with my boy Frederick, who has a very nice, beautiful house and a lot of cool records that I'm eager to listen to. And we're drinking coffee right now. It's very nice. And welcome to the podcast, I guess.
I'm super psyched to have you here, James. AKA Perturbator.
Yeah, me too.
Perturbate, to disturb someone. Where did you find that word?
Actually, I don't know. I was like, I don't have a romanticized sort of story about the name. So I was just like in my house and I was looking for a name that would sound like a 80s action flick, you know. And there's like Terminator, Predator, and a lot of things called Aider. Somewhere, and I thought, you know what? Nobody used a Perturbator before, so I'll take that.
And you're from Paris?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm from the outskirts of Paris.
Which banlieue? Which suburb?
93, 93, as we say in French. Pretty cool suburbs. Chill. A bit ghetto, but it's okay. I like it. That's how I grew up.
I got robbed in the Parisian suburbs once.
That sucks, man.
I was in Clichy-sous-Bois.
Oh yeah,
well, writing about hip hop.
Okay, yeah, that's a rough place. Sorry about that. I hope they didn't steal anything too valuable.
Well, they just stole my photographer's camera.
Oh, that's bad.
So I was just happy that I got something to write about. He was not very happy.
Man,
you've been connected to the synthwave movement, although you've mm-hmm. distanced yourself from it a lot lately.
Yes,
but
yes.
For people listening who don't know that genre, what is synthwave?
I guess I have no idea what it is now, but when I started making Perturbator, synthwave used to be electronic music, but with attention to detail and a tribute to the 80s movie soundtracks or pop music or new wave, but it still has this very electronic music bass, you know. It's not like exactly new wave, it's not like soundtrack, it still has a beat, has a, you know, chorus and a song structure. That's how I started. I started with a by listening to bands like Power Glove, maybe you heard of them, Noir Deco. There was not a lot of people doing this type of music back then, in 2011, I guess. I mean, now it grew and it grew a lot. And I think my style of synthwave, which is like darker than the usual, started to take on a life on its own, I guess. It became what people call a subgenre, I guess. Some people call it dark synth or something like that. I don't know about it. I just say that I make electronic music.
But your new single, Excess, is basically this gothic post-punk banger. Yeah. It doesn't really have anything to do with traditional synthwave.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of bands like Ulver, Mr. Bungle. I'm a big fan of bands that can switch their genre of music but retain their style, Like you heard you hear Ulver song and you know it's Ulver, even though they made pop, they made black metal, or they made hip hop beats or orchestral music. It still sounds like them. So I'm not trying to copy Ulver, of course, but I'm very inspired and I'm very admirative of that. And I want every Perturbator album to have their its own style, you know.
But you started off basically as a metal musician. You didn't listen to a lot of electronic music growing up.
Not at all.
You were a metalhead.
Yeah, not at all, actually. I was just like, I was a metalhead. Listened to a lot of death metal, black metal. I still do. It's still my favorite genre, my style of predilection, I guess.
And the guitar was your first instrument?
Yeah. I used to play guitar in various bands, I guess.
Actually listened to the Omniscient.
The Omniscient, yeah.
Omniscient.
Well, that's the only band I had where we actually wrote some music and recorded it and made some shows about it. And, well, right now it's a bit lame. Listening back to it, I feel like I could have done better, but it's okay. It's a, you know, it's a good basis.
It kind of reminded me of Korn, a few of the riffs.
Yeah, we were like very into it. Was like a period of my life where I was very into this sort of like a prog metal, like Meshuggah inspired metal. So we were, the riffs that I was writing were very heavy baritone, 7 strings, 8 strings guitar-ish.
I was quite surprised reading that you didn't listen to any electronic music except for maybe like 70s horror soundtracks.
Yeah, well, I think that's how Perturbator became, because I was kind of fed up with metal, and I was fed up with working with a band. I thought, you know what, I still want to make music, because it makes me mad if I don't make music. I still wanted to make music, and I saw this movie called Hobo with a Shotgun. I don't know if you've heard of this movie.
I think that was a movie made inspired by the Grindhouse project.
Yeah. It's a modern movie.
Tarantino's Grindhouse project.
It's a recent movie, but it has this sort of like this Grindhouse, lots of, it's in Technicolor and like shit like that, and a lot of 80s homage. And the soundtrack was mind-blowing for me because it was this mix of very modern and gritty electronic music, like Justice, for example, but with arpeggiators or synthesizers that you would hear from the past, like from the 80s. And I heard that and I was like, fuck, this is absolutely what I want to do. Yeah, I started to make music on my own. I didn't know anything about electronic music at all. And the only thing I knew about electronic music was the soundtracks, like John Carpenter, for example, Vangelis. This is the thing by John Carpenter that it's my first music choice. I think this is my... John Carpenter made music that it's my biggest inspiration for Perturbator.
One funny thing is that this is actually like Ennio Morricone song.
Yeah.
He wrote it following John Carpenter's instructions.
Exactly. But it sounds so John Carpenter. That's the weirdest thing. I know it's Ennio Morricone, but it sounds so John Carpenter. And another example...
It almost sounds more John Carpenter-like
than John Carpenter himself.
Songs. It kind of proves, you know, what a genius Morricone must be.
I have the same thing, same feeling about the Halloween 3 soundtrack, which is not made just by John Carpenter. I think there's Alan Haworth.
Oh, yeah, who worked with him on previous movies.
Yeah. And I think Alan Haworth brought some very cool sounding synthesizers to the soundtrack. And yeah, the main theme of Halloween 3 is also just like the thing. It sounds extremely, extremely John Carpenter. It has like this brooding atmosphere, this sense of mystery.
And it's so minimal.
It's super minimal, yeah. But you feel like you're in a street or like a dark alleyway. and it's fucking raining or something. Can I swear here?
You can swear as much as you like.
Amazing. Fucking great.
Any other jobs except for your music?
I used to sell popcorn in the theater, but it was kind of lame. Pretty lame. I didn't get to see good movies. I did that for like not even a month, I think. I just quit my... I was in school. I quit school and I started to make Perturbator. I didn't even get my grades.
So you didn't do the, like, baccalaureate thing?
Baccalaureate, exactly. I don't have that.
You don't have that?
No, I don't have it.
Because you went on tour as Perturbator.
Because I went to make Perturbator and, you know, I went to do the soundtracks of Hotline Miami and stuff like that. So that was, this quickly became my job.
I didn't realize you were that young when you started.
Yeah, I was about, I mean, it was like 2011.
Yeah.
So I believe I was around my 20s.
I'm a bit shocked that you haven't listened to like house or techno or electronic body music or because there's so many genres that you really touch on.
I came to it afterwards, like when I started Perturbator, soundtracks were my only grip to electronic music in general. And afterwards, I started to like really delve into more EBM stuff, more industrial stuff. Obviously, I heard about Depeche Mode and all the new wave things that I really liked, but I never saw it as electronic music. But it is, technically it is. I came to listen to a lot of different things like Front 242, DF, all the very more like alternative underground techno body music, like you said, and I really enjoyed it. I opened my mind about electronic music and I started to really enjoy it.
Some of your fans, they do their own videos and put on YouTube where they use like scenes from RoboCop or Akira or The Terminator.
Yeah. Well, that's...
It works really well because so many of your songs are basically soundtracks to movies that don't exist.
Yeah, I used to do some of them myself, actually. I used to, because I didn't have money to buy music videos, of course, so I used to cut some movie clips and just put it on my own music. And I think it got people's attention because it would work often.
Speaking of which, you were going to play a Blade Runner song.
Yeah, right? Vangelis. Vangelis, pretty much my favorite musician in the big four of synths. What I call the big four of synths is like John Carpenter, Vangelis, I would say Tangerine Dream, and Goblin. And Vangelis is my biggest influence, my favorite musician. I love the way he used pads and sound to make to create an atmosphere. He's all about the atmosphere.
And this is Blade Runner Blues.
Exactly, from Blade Runner soundtrack.
So beautiful.
Very beautiful. Very, very beautiful. It plays in the scene where, I don't know if you saw the movie, I guess you did.
Many, many times.
Many times. It's my favorite movie of all time. It plays in the scene where Deckard takes a glass of whiskey and he goes on his balcony and you see the beautiful matte painting of the city and it looks so big and he looks super small. It's very melancholic.
You know, ever since I saw Blade Runner, I've been dreaming about how the world would be so dark and cool and full of androids and neon and flying cars in 2019.
Yeah.
And, you know, the year of the movie.
Yeah,
and now we're finally living in 2019, and I'm kind of disappointed.
And it's not like that. It's not like that.
You know, things look basically the same way they did 20 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah, but you know what? In a way, in a sense, it's kind of good like that, because the future depicted in Blade Runner, as beautiful as it looks like, it's a very dark future. It's a very lonely future, honestly.
I feel quite futuristic in the morning, though, when my wife goes to work, and she works at H&M's Department for Artificial Intelligence.
Oh, yeah. This is crazy.
Yeah. You know, she doesn't work with robots, but mm-hmm. with computer systems that will decide how they deliver clothes all over the world.
It's kind of crazy. It's I don't know if it's a good thing or if it's a bad thing. It's not up for me to decide, but I used to go to my ex sound engineer house, and he has like one of those smart house, like you enter the house and you go like, hey, put on the lights, or you know, whatever, and the house would do it by itself. I think it's kind of it can be creepy at times, because you feel like you're being watched,
and then the house will develop its own conscience and kick your friend out.
Exactly. Yeah,
I was thinking about artificial intelligence when I read the title of your last album, The Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
Because that's an expression used about how humans feel, you know, threatened or they repulsed by robots
that look almost like them, yeah.
Like them. Whereas mm-hmm. they can develop warm feelings for robots like who huge. Don't look human at all.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
R2-D2.
Yeah. I have no idea why people... You see nowadays in especially in Asian countries, they're like really developing this whole robots and android things or whatever, and they always make them look so creepy. Like they do look creepy. You see like I don't know, I think a Japanese robot who sell tickets for the subway, and she has like this face, like they try to give her like expressions. And I have no idea why people do that. Like, why feeling the need to make a machine look like you? It's kind of weird. It's kind of egotistical in a way, right?
And then you see a movie like Big Hero 6. I'm not sure if you...
Yeah, I saw this one.
There's a big, fat, plastic, white robot. Yeah,
big Michelin man.
With a face that's just one line connecting two black dots. That's it. That's the entire face. And you love the guy. Or the robot.
Because it's iconic, and it looks not threatening. I think there's something very menacing about human, even like the likeness of a human being. It is something that probably looks super threatening. I have an extract here from a musician, a music producer that I'm a huge fan of. His name is Lorne.
Who's that?
He's, you know what? I don't know, actually. He's a very, very mysterious guy. I heard of him through, I guess it was like a music video called Acid Rain. And I listened to his Maze to Nowhere album. And it's the most dark electronic music album I've heard in a way, and super heavy and very, very moody, and I really love it.
And what's this track called?
This track is called Oxbow B.
That's some nice darkness right there.
Very heavy, very heavy. He used to be a sound designer. He works...
Hopefully lots of Lorde fans type in Lorne by mistake.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, he's something. He is, like, extremely talented. Super heavy music. A lot of very interesting sound design choices. ¶¶
Do you know why so many metal fans get into synthwave?
I have no idea. It's so
puzzling to me because, you know, I used to get beaten up by guys wearing Metallica t-shirts for listening to electronic music. You know, those were two completely different worlds when I was growing up. And now that there's one of the biggest metal sites is called Metal Sucks.
Metal Sucks,
They have something called Synthwave Sunday.
Oh, yeah? I think I heard about it.
They listed your album, The Uncanny Valley, as under a special section called Albums That Will Fuck Your Face Off.
Wow. I think I saw that, yeah. I didn't know it was on Metal Sucks.
That's nice.
Thanks to them. I never grew up in this type of environment where, how to put it, music was music. It was never a battle of genres. And I always found it extremely childish to be like, okay, I listen to metal, so I'm not going to listen to your pop music or whatever. Electronic music is for pussies. And I guess there are still some people like that. I do get some people like that talking about Perturbator, like, oh, he thinks he's metal, but he's not, or whatever. I really don't give a shit. I'm not pretending to be metal. I believe my music has a violence and a aggressivity to my music that maybe some metal fans will find interesting. But yeah, I like every style of music. Not every style of music, actually. There's some styles of music that I can't stand. Electronic music is super aggressive. Can be very aggressive or very dark, like we just heard with Lauren here.
And you've played at the biggest metal festivals like Download, Roadburn, Hellfest.
Yeah, that's crazy. I have no idea why.
They don't book that many electronic musicians.
Yeah, I think it's because it's electronic music, there is like a song structure and there is, again, this violence in my music. And it's also a bit of fantasy in it. It's a very... how to say, narrative music, in a way. You imagine yourself in a futuristic city or in this dystopian city or something like that, in a setting, basically. And I think a lot of metal albums do that in a way, like Iron Maiden or Slayer, who makes you feel like you're in hell. And speaking of which, my next track is Slayer, Altar of Sacrifice.
Rain in Blood, that's one of those albums that I'll never get tired of.
It was my first metal album.
It was?
Believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, that's a good choice.
My mother used to be a music critic, and my dad turned, by the way. And she would have this album on her shelf, like it's the CD version, and I had like a Walkman when I was like a very, very little boy. And I used to steal this album just for the cover. Just by looking at the artwork, I knew I wanted to listen to it. And I clearly remember nights where I was like just listening to it on my little Walkman under my blanket, and I was just like reading the lyrics, especially the lyrics to this track, Altar of Sacrifice.
What's it about?
Oh man, it's about a lot of satanic stuff, and I guess it's Slayer, and it's about hell.
Because the thing with Slayer is that sometimes they sang about. Like Auschwitz or the Holocaust, would get into subjects that were even heavier than regular satanic stuff.
But I was too young to understand this type of thing. I was literally like, I don't know, 6 years old or something like that. And I remember like reading the lyrics to Altar of Sacrifice, and at one point he goes like, enter to the realm of Satan or something like that. And when I was reading that, I was feeling bad, like I thought I was doing something terrible by listening to this album. Use them when you feel the need. Master the forces and powers of Satan, controlling the creatures in the steep. Drowned in the castles that float in the sky. Learn to resist the temptation. Watching the angels sift to the heavens. Endlessly searching for salvation.
I saw this clip on YouTube where you DJ at a club in Paris called Le Gibus.
Wow, that was a while ago.
And right when you start, someone in the audience screams, Electro Satanique.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a lot of devil worshippers among your fans?
Devil worshippers? I don't know. I don't ask them what they worship. I know I'm pretty good friends with the Church of Satan, actually. Well, not the Church of Satan, not all of them, but... I have friends there. I made an interview with them, actually, with the Church of Satan. If they worship, people can worship whatever they want, as long as they don't force it on other people.
But you don't have an interest in the occult yourself.
I do have an interest in it, but I don't consider myself a Satanist or something like that. I'm an atheist. Hard atheist.
One thing that's not so common within metal is like remixes. People remixing metal bands, but you recently remixed a song called Sinus by Cult of Luna, a Swedish band.
Yeah, love this band. I really love
it. And it sounds like this. Luna is a band from Umeå, a northern city in Sweden, where they have a lot of the hardcore bands come from there, like Refused, for instance.
Oh yeah, Refused. I'm a big fan of Cult of Luna. They have a way to make music. It's metal, but it's so atmospheric, and I always use this word. But I love the way they put layers of instruments over layers of instruments, and the latest album Mariner is like one of my favorite LPs of the year 2017, I believe they released it, and Vertical before that, the latest album. It was so amazing.
It's extremely heavy.
It's very heavy, but also very airy, like very, it has a lot of synthesizers, and I'm a sucker for that. If you have synthesizer in your metal band, I'm interested.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So did you get in touch with them, or was it the opposite?
It was my manager who got in touch with their manager, and you know, we made it happen. I'm a big fan of their music. I guess they enjoy mine. I'm not too sure, but I'm very proud of my remix. Come with me into the trees. We'll lay on the grass and let the hours pass. Take my hand, come back to the land. Let's get away just for one day. The next song is Depeche Mode, another song from my childhood. I used to switch between Slayer, Rain in Blood, the album, and Depeche Mode, Violator. But this next song is not from Violator. It's Stripped, my favorite Depeche Mode song.
Oh, from Black Celebration?
Yeah.
My favorite Depeche Mode album.
Your favorite Depeche Mode album.
How did you discover Depeche Mode?
From my mother again. She was a big fan of Depeche Mode. I think she still is. So thanks to her, she used to play me the whole Violator album when I was like also a kid. So I used to listen to very harsh Slayer album and very soothing and sexy Depeche Mode album, and I loved both. And I think Perturbator, my music, if I want to bastardize my sound, I would say it's a mix between Depeche Mode and Slayer, if they had a kid.
Speaking of your mom, I wanted to play you this track. So this is... Étrange Affinité by Radio Romance.
Radio Romance, yeah. This is my
early
mom's
80s
band.
Yeah. Your mom was...
My mom is a singer here. Yeah. She's singing on this. I never listened to it too much, actually. But, yeah, I recognize her voice, of course. It does sound cool.
I found this on a compilation called Les Jeunes Gens Modernes, The Young and Modern People, Volume 2.
Yeah. I don't think they ever made an album, actually. I don't know. I think they only made singles. with Radio Romance.
Both your parents are music journalists and musicians as well. Your father is Nick Kent.
Nick Kent,
probably the most influential rock journalist of all time.
Oh.
And he moved to Paris in the late 80s.
Yeah.
Met your mom, Laurence Omans,
mm-hmm.
who worked a lot for TV.
And yeah,
did a lot of interviews with Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love.
Yeah,
she translated Kurt Cobain's diaries to French.
Yes. That's true. She also used to take me to those interviews that she made, and I was blessed. I could say I was very blessed to be able to see and be next to people that I would later on be a big fan of, especially Ministry. She did a full interview of Faith No More, and I was like right next to Mac Patton, which is one of my favorite vocalists of all time. I was right next to him, just
how old
playing
were you
around.
Then?
I was a baby boy, man. I was like, I don't know.
You were
six.
Born in 1993, right?
93, yeah. I was like 6 years old, something like that, five. Just like barely old enough to walk, you know? And I used to mess around with the people from these bands. I saw Thom Yorke, Iggy Pop, but I didn't know because I was too young to know who they were.
So what was it like to grow up with parents who were so passionate about rock music?
It was normal. I never saw them as people passionate about rock music. I just saw them as my parents, you know. Especially when the younger I was just thinking, you know, this is my parents. I didn't really delve into what they're doing. And the older I grew, the more I realized, oh, shit, how they work with these people and they know these people, and I love them too. But it definitely made it easier for me to make music, to drop out of school and make music. Well, they were okay with it. It didn't feel any different.
One thing that fascinates me is the way that the 80s to you is almost this magical, mythical kingdom, like, you know, Narnia or Oz or...
Not exactly. I know that it was shit. It was probably shit. And my parents always told me, because I never lived the 80s, but they were always like, the 80s was fucking depressing, especially in France or countries like the European countries. The 80s were probably shit, but it looks from the movies and from everything you see, like the pop culture nowadays, it looks like it was amazing. And I always knew that as when I was making Perturbator. Perturbator is not a tribute to the 80s, as it were. It's just this idea of what the 80s were, and it's just like trying to distort it a bit, make it a bit more angry and whatever. But I'm pretty sure the 80s was shit, and I'm glad I didn't get born there. I don't think everything was better before. You had the Cold War in the US and the Russia. You had no phones, no fucking internet. I mean... couldn't do a podcast.
I'm a pretty huge fan of your father's writing, so I read his autobiography Apathy for the Devil, where he writes about the 80s
and
how that was when rock and roll died, like the true spirit of rock music was just faded away and
he's a firm believer of that. I don't agree with him, but yeah, that's a different topic. We discuss about that sometimes with my dad.
My favorite story about your father,
yeah,
is the one I heard that he was once out having dinner in a Chinese restaurant with David Bowie and Iggy Pop,
mm-hmm.
and this waitress comes up to them and she asks your father for an autograph.
Yeah,
and she ignores the other two.
Oh,
because your father is the one who looks like a rock star. He hasn't told you that story.
He didn't tell me that story. He told me many stories now. I think my favorite story, the one I will always remember, is he got in a fight. Not really in a fight, but he got in a fight with Bob Marley.
Bob Marley. How do you get in a fight with Bob Marley?
Yeah, that's the funny thing. That's the irony of the story, because Bob Marley is supposed to be this king of peace, you know, like the man who who loves everybody. But Bob Marley started, I think it was in a hotel, doing some interviews, and it was like a hotel full of famous people from back then. And he went to the toilet, and Bob Marley was there with his friend smoking a huge joint. And my dad was just there, like, trying to take a piss, I guess. And Bob Marley started to, like, start shit with him. Like, dude, get the fuck out of the toilet. I'm here. And just, you know, it's so funny for me to imagine Bob Marley, who's seen as this Jesus, like the king of peace, just trying to start a fight with my dad. This is crazy.
Speaking of your dad getting into fights, let's listen to the Sex Pistols.
Oh, man.
I am an anarchist. Don't know what I want, but I know how to get it. I wanna destroy, possibly, 'cause I wanna be anarchy. Now dogs, buddy. Anarchy for the
year. Your dad played guitar in Sex Pistols for a few months in 1975.
Yeah, a very early incarnation of the Sex Pistols.
Like a year before they became
the
really
Sex
big.
Pistols, yeah, really.
At that point, I think the Pistols were basically doing like 60s covers. Like covering pop songs from the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And then your father played guitar with them, and the big influence that he had on the band that was, you know, crucial to their development was not his guitar playing, but that your father told Steve Jones that he should listen to the Stooges.
Yeah,
I guess. The entire band, you know, the sound changed completely.
Yeah, well, and then after that, Sid Vicious came, and what a dick.
What happened between him and your father?
I don't know. I think they got in a fight. I think Sid Vicious is like this very dumb character. If I recall the story correctly, the manager of the Sex Pistols back in that time said that
Michael McLaren,
yeah, said that Sid Vicious should beat someone from the band to make an image to create this image of like a dangerous band. He started to beat my dad with a bicycle chain, if I remember.
Yeah, a rusty bicycle chain.
A rusty bicycle chain in a bar, and yeah, I mean that's just a stupid move. It's just fucking stupid.
But he only managed to hit your dad once with the rusty bike chain.
I was not here, so I cannot tell you, man. But yeah, probably. Well, my dad always talks about Sid Vicious as if he's like a rabid dog. You just tell him who to bite, and he's going to do it. But he has no brain, you know?
I'm sorry if I talk too much about your father, but I'm just really, really fascinated by his story, and I've read all his articles and
it's okay.
And books. One of the reasons that, you know, rock writers like me kind of worship your father is that he was also like, he wasn't just a journalist, he was a rock star at the same time.
That's cool.
And he had this amazing look. If you look at the old pictures of him, someone described him as a mixture of Lord Byron and a lizard standing on its two legs.
Man.
Like a very tall, very thin, very pale, and dressed completely in black leather.
Well,
does he still look as cool as that?
He looks like my dad now. He doesn't wear a leather jacket. He looks like a very everyday man. But I love him. I love him. Not trying to diss on his fashion.
But how does he feel about the music that you make?
We made like a secret pact. Not really, it's not that like that, but I'd rather not know what my dad thinks of my music. And I think he's, every time he talks about it with me, he just tells me he enjoys it, but I think it's just because he's my dad. So I will never know, and I'd rather not know exactly what he thinks about my music.
There's a very sweet passage in his book, Apathy for the Devil, your father's memoir, where he writes about you.
Oh, yeah.
And he writes like this: Jim is 16 now, with hair growing more than halfway down his back, and a room full of computers and guitars. Every morning before setting off to school, he psychs himself by playing music. Death metal, they call it. That sounds like the Lord of Misrule and his minions building shelves in an adjacent building. He has no respect for the old groups that I used to knock around with. The 70s have little to tempt him with, or so he claims, and I can't say that I blame him.
That is sweet. That is sweet. It's true. It's totally true.
When you were 16 at that point.
I was 16, and I was waking him up with my music. And by then, yeah, but back then, I was not interested in his, in the 70s and in the 60s bands that you used to listen to. And I think that came a bit later, like when I turned... I guess when I turned 19 or 18, I started to get interested in what my dad listened to, and of course my mom as well, and discovered some bands that I cannot believe I missed the mark on them, like bands like Yes or Klaatu, or very old bands that my dad used to love, and of course the Rolling Stones, this type of thing, Led Zeppelin even, that I used to hate. For some reason, because I didn't know them too much, but now I start to get an appreciation for them. Yeah. So yeah, I think he was proud of that. I think he was happy with that.
Has he warned you about the dangers of the rock and roll lifestyle?
Oh, he did. He did a lot. He did a lot. But at the same time, he knows that it's what I want to do. It's what I wanted to do. Make music, live from it, tour. He couldn't prevent me from doing it, but he never wanted to prevent me from doing it. He just wanted me to know through his books, through his writing, but also through the conversation we had together, that yeah, it's a tricky road full of traps.
So this is Steam Machine by Daft Punk. While we listen to this, I'm going to take a nicotine pouch.
Nicotine pouch. Oh,
yes. Are you familiar with Swedish snus?
You put it.
You put it on your lip.
I'm familiar with it.
But you smoke, right? Or you?
I smoke a lot.
Okay, yeah, because the nicotine rush is, kind of intense, just like Daft Punk. And these nicotine pouches, by the way, are called Nordic Spirit True White. So,
a little ad here, a little ad space.
Daft Punk was formed in 1993, the year you were born.
Yep.
Do you have any relationship to them? Because, you know, when you think electronic music in France, you think of
Daft Punk,
of course, in a way. Yeah. There's really like a before and after that they arrived.
Believe it or not, I have a love-hate relationship with them, because I have a lot of admiration for what they brought to electronic music, and also, especially in France, they made it cool, they made it groovy. But also, a lot of things I don't like about them. I don't like the sampling, you know, the famous... The Discovery album is it's almost stolen music, and I have like a problem with that a little bit. Also, I have a problem with the way they communicate with their fans, or some of their PR moves. I'm not a big fan of, especially nowadays. I don't really like what they're doing.
There's so many musicians that are masked, that hide their faces. Mm.
Daft Punk is one of the only masked band that still has a mask, that never revealed their faces too much. The music never touched me either, really. I always found it tame compared to their peers. Justice to me was the rock and roll of electronic music in France. No.
perhaps the most famous French electronic musician, Jean-Michel Jarre, once mentioned you in an interview, and he said, "Perturbator, j'adore complètement, beaucoup, Perturbator, I adore completely, very much." And you wrote on Twitter that you would be up for a collaboration or a collab or a bro lab.
A bro lab.
That's a good expression, a bro lab.
I met him very recently, actually, a couple of months ago, and I made something for him. I don't know if you saw that, but he's going to release a remix album and with three remixes from artists he likes, and I'm one of them. So
is he remixing you?
I'm remixing him.
You're remixing him. Okay.
And later on, I cannot talk too much about it, but there's going to be more collaboration with Jean-Michel Jarre. He's the nicest person I know. A very down-to-earth legend.
Have you been in touch with Gesaffelstein in any way?
No, not really. I think, no.
I love his first record. That was something that completely blew me away.
Aleph is pretty good. It's a good album.
And then the new one came out, and I'm so... I don't understand what he's trying to do.
The new music. Yeah. I'm divided by the new thing, but Aleph is fucking amazing. It's a great album. I love his style. I love the way he makes electronic music sound minimalistic, but very dangerous, very dark. And I always had a mad respect for his music, but I never saw the guy. I never met him. Never reached out to me, or I never reached out to him.
I'm almost as disappointed as I was after seeing The Phantom Menace.
Oh, man.
Like Star Wars episode
that
one.
That much.
Yeah, I'm still, you know, I'm discussing this with my therapist.
Oh.
It's that bad. You know, you played some John Carpenter earlier.
Yes.
Dozens of artists have been inspired by him.
Oh, yeah.
This is one of my favorite John Carpenter-inspired tracks. It's by a French producer called Jennifer Cardini.
Okay.
Who's a techno DJ, and she put out this song in 2013 called Venom.
The Venom. Never heard of it.
She usually just makes like 4-to-the-floor techno.
Yeah.
This is really her only
soundtrack-ish. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of people who do that in France, actually. This type of music, very synthy, but like people who used to make techno music and they start to move towards more synthesizer and John Carpenter-esque sounds. I think about the band called a producer called Remote, or The Hacker.
Oh, The Hacker. I love The Hacker.
The Hacker is...
Especially the stuff he did with Miss Kitten.
Yeah, Miss Kitten is, yeah. Remote. I'm a big fan of Micron, with a K. Good friends of Gesaffelstein, I guess, who sound very... It's very techno-ish, but it also has this atmosphere to it that I really like. Very John Carpenter-esque, I guess, yeah.
When will your next album be out?
Probably this year. I'm going to try to release it this year after all the tours, because I have a lot of tours right now. But as soon as I come back home to my wife and my cat.
What's your cat called?
Diva.
Diva?
Diva, yeah.
Like one of my favorite French movies of all time.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to work on the album. It's not over yet. It's not finished. But I aim to release it by September, I guess.
Will you continue exploring the post-punk thing on Excess?
Yeah, the whole album is going to be pretty much like Excess.
Will there be vocalists?
Yeah. I think a lot more than it used to. I don't think I'm going to do too much instrumental tracks, probably one or two. But yeah, most of the album will be with vocalists. I'm going to sing on it. I sing already on XS.
Yeah, you sing on XS, right?
Yeah, it's my voice. Well, singing is a big word, and I'm just, you know, mumbling or talking, whatever. It's going to be like that. Very inspired by new wave, cold wave, post-punk. A lot more guitars, a lot more
dark stuff.
Dark stuff. Dark stuff, exactly. Frederick, thank you for having me. It's been very nice. Listen to new music. I'm gonna listen to some of the things that you showed me because I didn't know about them. But I have to go. I have to do a sound check and I have to do a show tonight at the Baser.
I'm really looking forward to that. Thanks for coming.
Thank
here.
You.
It's been a true honor to have you here, and thanks for loads and loads and loads of very dark electronic music.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Den här podcasten producerades av Lejon Media i samarbete med Nordic Spirit True White, den tobaksfria nikoprillan. Producent var Daniel Bäckström och Perturbator var hemma i Australien.
On a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.